The Trump administration wants to deport hundreds of thousands of Haitians back to Haiti, where 1.5 million people are already refugees from gang violence. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm your host, Tim Padgett. Today our show comes to you live from the Little Haiti Cultural Complex in Miami, and we're devoting the program to the immigration crisis facing our large and important Haitian community. Next week may see the cancellation of the Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, that has shielded more than 350,000 Haitians from deportation to Haiti, that is, back to a country that's been rendered dystopian by the chaos of violent gang rule. Does Trump have a case, or will the U.S. courts block him? All that coming up right after the news. Tim Padgett. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Bienvenidos, bienvenido, and most of all, bienveni. Our thanks to Haitian-American recording artist Mario Willem I of Jupiter for sharing his lovely Haitian compas song, Cinq Cents Ans, or 500 Years. We are in fact coming to you live from the Little Haiti Cultural Complex in Miami, and we're devoting today's show to the TPS crisis confronting our large and important Haitian community. TPS, or Temporary Protected Status, currently shields more than 350,000 Haitians in the U.S. and more than 100,000 here in South Florida from deportation to Haiti. That matters because of the violent gang rule that has left 1.5 million people in Haiti homeless. But next Tuesday, the Trump administration is set to end TPS for Haitians. The U.S. courts might prevent that, but meanwhile, we know the Haitian community that contributes so much to our larger community here is caught in a frightening limbo. So we want to start by thanking the Little Haiti Cultural Complex, one of Miami's architectural jewels, for hosting us today, and by hearing from two Haitian community members affected by this impending TPS cancellation. With us are Fabienne Policarpe, an artist and head of the Haitian community nonprofit Membeni, or Blessed Hands, and Farah Lariou, a Haitian TPS holder who is chair of the Miramar Haitian American Residents and Business Owners Association. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for
having us. Now, I just want to remind people, just very quickly, what TPS is. Temporary Protected Status was legislation created by Congress in 1991 to protect people from being deported back to countries deemed too unsafe to be returned to. In Haiti's case, TPS was designated in 2010 after the catastrophic earthquake there, but in years since, it's been extended because of the violent gang rule that I just mentioned that has taken over the country in the past 15 years. And that is where we are today, and that TPS, as I mentioned now, starting next Tuesday, February 3rd, could be terminated by the Trump administration. Fabienne, Haitians on TPS, many have been here for 15 years. That's a long time. Many are embedded in the community. They have families, businesses, lives here. How is this community, from your perspective, and particularly through your work with the community, dealing with the prospect of TPS cancellation, including your own friends and family? I know you have relatives who are TPS holders.
Yes, it's very challenging, right? Because we as Haitian people are very proud people. We're proud of who we are, we're proud of where we come from. And despite what's happening, we're still proud, right? But when it comes to the TPS, not only are people fearful, right? But there's this inhumane way that we're being treated, not just here in the U.S., but other countries who are denouncing us, who are saying that they won't receive us. And it's almost like we're being pushed aside as if we don't matter, as if we don't have impact on communities, as if we aren't community members, as if we haven't invested time, money, and energy into the community. And so there is a fear that is there, but there is a fear of coming outside, a fear of attending events because of what can happen and a fear of what's happening in the future, which is on the third, you know. Our fate is just hanging in a balance of what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Farah, as a TPS holder yourself, what are your own emotions and plans as this deadline next Tuesday approaches?
Tim, I'm trying to focus, focus on the fact. For my right to exist, to drive, to continue to be the woman I am, and to hold on my dreams. But it's very difficult. I cannot even want my head around the idea of I'm going to pack 20 years of my life, because I have to mention that I've been living in the United States since 2005. I'm sorry, since 2005. And how you ask me to pack my life and to go back to a country where there's no power, there's no Wi-Fi. So even as an entrepreneur, I could continue to develop my business. I cannot do it from Haiti. And then also because I've been very outspoken against the government in Haiti and the corruption, the incompetency, and also the terrorist group. And I don't like to call them gangs because by definition, they are terrorists. They're not gangs.
Right, and they've been designated as such by the Trump administration.
Okay, and so for me, it's a life. It's a death sentence.
Right.
And for many of us, it's a death sentence.
Fabian, what could this do not just to Haitian TPS holders like Farah and their families, but the larger Haitian community from here in Little Haiti, you know, on up to Palm Beach County, which has a very large Haitian community as well? What do you see this doing? What kind of impact do you see it having on that community here?
It's very scary, right? When we think about the health risk that it puts on people with the amount of stress that they have to live with, of not knowing how their lives are staying on the imbalanced right now, right? You also have people who don't have work to go to. They can't go to work. They can't leave their homes. And when we look at that, right, we look at a system that doesn't have, a way for people to say, okay, when I go home, who's going to be there to receive me? Mm-hmm. Who's going to help support me? Who's going to support my children who are left behind? Who's going to support? So when we look at the economic impacts, when we look at the mental health impacts of the people that are, everybody is affected.
Because you're talking about families, I would venture to say maybe even most families involved here are mixed immigration status-wise. Some are TPS holders, but they've had children who were born here, and that makes it, you know, frightfully complicated.
Of course, no? Yeah. Of course. You have husbands and wives. Right now you're watching on social media where wives are having to stop their lives, leave their children behind to go and support the husband that has been deported. And then when we look at the amount of violence that is happening with this, you know, accompanied with this TPS situation, I mean, everybody's on edge. It's not just the Haitian community. Everybody is on edge. So as we look at that, it's not just impacting Haitians. It's impacting everybody.
Yeah, I spoke to a Haitian TPS holder who's a nurse practitioner up in Boynton Beach yesterday. She has a teenage daughter who's a U.S. citizen. She doesn't know how she's going to handle this if this does happen next Tuesday. But Farah, how do you and TPS holders face the prospect of having to return to Haiti? I mean, you mentioned it might be a death sentence. Is it even possible for these hundreds of thousands of Haitians to go back to the country?
I can tell you, many of us won't do that. Many of us. We will continue to fight. Because it's just, for some people, it's not a choice to go back to Haiti. It's not, they can't go back to Haiti. Mm-hmm. Because they have nothing, they have no family there, and it's panic. There are people calling me. I have a TPS, Asian TPS group. They told me that they lost sleep, anxiety, depression, the crying. Some already have received a termination letter for their job, or they have been removed from the schedule. And so by next week, they cannot go to work. How are they going to pay the bills? But the option of going back to Haiti, mm-hmm. it's not there.
Fabian, just quickly, do you anticipate most people, most TPS holders, deciding to stay even if the Trump administration cancels TPS?
I think that it's half and half. There are people that I've spoken to that said that they're going to leave because the amount of stress that it's putting on them and just sitting in the balances of just waiting of what's going to happen next is just way too much on their health. Yeah. And so one of the questions that I have within myself is for the community, is for the diaspora, like, how can we make sure that our people feel safe when they go home? What systems do we have in place once they get off the planes? Are we having those conversations around what does the support system look like once they do leave? Because the inevitable feels like it's here.
And just in the 30 seconds we have left here, Farah, do you worry that we could be seeing ICE raids like we've been seeing, for example, in Minnesota, come next Tuesday here in this community?
It's possible, and for me, I'm ready to face it.
Okay. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. We're coming to you from the Little Haiti Cultural Complex in Miami, where we're discussing the TPS crisis facing our Haitian community here next week. I want to turn now to Tamara LaBruce. She is the new director of the nonprofit Saint-La Haitian Neighborhood Center in North Miami, and Paul Christian Namphy, who is lead organizer for the nonprofit Family Action Network Movement, or FAM, here in Miami. Thank you both for being here as well. Now, you represent perhaps the two most important Haitian support organizations in South Florida. Tamara, as the director of Saint-La, how are you preparing for this potential community trauma that's coming next week?
We've been preparing all along, working with our community, making sure that we are present, as we always have been, providing accurate information, helping our families to think through what it's going to look like for them, making a plan, being proactive, thinking about protecting their assets, protecting their children, and just being present and being available to support our families. We've been doing it all along, and we will continue to do so.
So this is something you've been foreseeing for not even before the second Trump administration took office last year? This is something you were anticipating?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Our community is always at threat and always a target, so we have to stay prepared.
Paul, what about FAM? How is your organization preparing in the same way I just asked Tamara?
Well, as Tamara mentioned also, this has been a long-standing risk, although the risk ebbs and flows depending, of course, on the decision makers. We at FAM have always believed in an integration between service providing and advocacy. And we believe, first of all, of course, part of our service providing is immigration services. We not only provide direct immigration services with our community members, but we also have arrangements, for example, with Catholic Legal Services to provide legal support. And what we see also is that it's not simply a matter of handing over a service, but it's also about empowerment. And a big piece of that is informing our community members. So what we have constantly been communicating with our base, with our community members, and also with all the listeners who are here today, some of them are Haitian, some of them, you know, have different immigration statuses, seek the counsel of an immigration lawyer, because that is the most important thing that people can do. But we also have regular programs. We have a weekly radio program, Voix Femme, on WLQY, 1320 AM, every Sunday at 11. And where we are getting the word out, the majority of weeks of 2025, we had an immigration lawyer basically breaking down what the latest news is, as well as really prepping people for what is up and coming. And so those are some of the key aspects. And, of course, we also, it's about the citizens, because they have to vote, because that way we can determine who our decision makers are. Thank you.
Tamara, I want to touch on that psychological point that Fabian Policarp mentioned earlier, the sense that amongst the Haitian community that there's a sense of anti-Haitian persecution that perhaps is involved also with the termination of TPS here. And, we go back to, you know, the awful things that President Trump, for example, said about Haitian migrants in Springfield, Ohio during the 2024 campaign. Do you feel that is present out there too with the community you're working with?
Absolutely. It's always been there. It's continued to be there. Many of our community members feel targeted. The history speaks for itself, and we know that Haitians historically have not been treated fairly, not been treated the same as other nationals coming in from other countries. The emotional impact of that is severe, and it takes quite a toll on our children, on our families. We're seeing the stress, we're seeing the anxiety, we're seeing the uncertainty. We're seeing parents having to really make a choice between their own, the future of their children and their own safety. No parent should have to make that choice. We're also seeing the thought around staying and what does that look like. If you entered into the United States under TPS, you are granted status. We welcome these individuals into our community. And so to go from being able to live here legally and work legally and be present and be a contributing member to society, to go from that to essentially having to disappear and having to be invisible, that's a whole different life, and the toll that that takes is also tremendous.
But Paul, what is the Trump administration, in your estimation, forgetting about Haitian TPS holders, their social and economic contribution to the broader community here? I mean, we keep hearing that, you know, TPS holders in Florida in general contribute about $10 billion to the economy here. A third of that, more or less, comes from Haitian TPS holders, as well as hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes from Haitian TPS holders. What is the Trump administration forgetting in that regard, in your opinion?
All those statistics and figures are correct. You use the word forgetting. I would use the word intentionally omitting. They know what they're doing. However, the American people, many of them do not know what's going on. And that's where we need to focus our efforts around two very specific pieces to this. You mentioned the economic piece. Haitians in the United States are vital to the national interest. And we push back on the notion that somehow not only we are not in the national interest, but this can be a criteria for erasing us and chasing us out.
I mentioned earlier with Fabian and Farah, the nurse practitioner I spoke to in Boynton Beach yesterday, she's in what's known as the home health care industry. And it seems to me that Haitian migrants have played a very large role in keeping that very important economic sector, especially in the state of Florida, strong, no?
Florida cannot exist without migrant labor. And the specific sector that you're mentioning, the health sector, and the specific geography of Florida we're talking about, and the specific demographics of Haitian TPS holders and others who are working in the health sector, this is suicide, literally, to basically go after them. And there was even the story in the previous hour about in a press call with Ayanna Pressy's office, where even Trump voters, you know, where their family members are going to be impacted by their TPS holder Haitian caregivers who are at risk of being deported. And that's why we need to make that case to the American people.
Tamara, what's your perspective about that professional community member contribution that Haitian TPS holders make, particularly in the healthcare industry? What kind of a hole do you see that leaving, not just in the Haitian community, but in the larger community that we live in here?
Yes, I agree absolutely that the impact is tremendous, not just in the healthcare, but in the service industry, hospitality industry. Haitian immigrants have always been a part of our economic backbone, and there are sectors in our community that will essentially crumble without that support, without that help, without that labor. Haitian individuals and immigrants oftentimes are doing the work that others don't want to do, refuse to do, and so they are here making a contribution and always have been. So to the threat of removing all of those individuals from the labor force will not just create a major gap, but will essentially crumble our economic fiber.
And do you see these people being able to find anything back in Haiti in terms of that kind of professional fulfillment or contribution?
Absolutely not. We know that those opportunities don't exist in Haiti because of the gang violence that we've spoken about, the political instability. There's no access to basic services. And so we know that those opportunities absolutely don't exist in Haiti, which is why these individuals are here to begin with. And so to ignore that or to conveniently forget that is reckless and irresponsible.
Paul, finally, in just the 30 seconds or so we have left, as I asked Farah, do you also fear that we could be seeing ICE raids as of February 3rd next week because of TPS being canceled? And if so, how will the community confront that?
They've already started, but they are likely to be stepped up.
That's the gist of my question. Yeah.
And so we need to make sure to keep our people protected. And I know that Tessa Flick is going to talk a little bit about this later, but people need to speak up. You need to call your congressional switchboard, 202-224-3121. Give your zip code to get your congressional representative. Extend TPS, redesignate TPS, support the Haiti TPS discharge petition. Because when you do that, you are protecting our community members. Finally, a shout out to WLRN. I've been a listener contributor for 25 years. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And shout out to you, Wilkin Brutus, Michael Stock, and Lake Ted Grossman.
Well, thank you so much to the both of you. Paul Krishnanamphy is lead organizer for FAM, the Family Action Network Movement. Tamara LaBruce is director of the Saint La Haitian Neighborhood Center. Many thanks to you both. When we return here at the Little Haiti Cultural Complex, we'll assess the conditions back in Haiti. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thank you, Mario Willemi, and welcome back to the South Florida Roundup, airing today from the Little Haiti Cultural Complex in Miami for our program devoted to the TPS crisis facing our Haitian community. I'm Tim Padgett. One of the most important arguments against ending TPS for Haitians in Haiti is Haiti itself. The Trump administration argues it's somehow safe for Haitians in the U.S. to return to their country, but the evidence on the ground there overwhelmingly suggests otherwise. The 2010 earthquake was, as I mentioned, the original impetus for Haitian TPS, but today, powerful and violent gangs are the country's de facto government. Their ever-expanding grip on Haiti, the murders, rapes, kidnappings, hijackings, and property destruction have made 1.5 million people homeless refugees. Haitian police and international support cops seem helpless to confront the gangs, and the interim government council that was supposed to prepare the way for new elections has turned out to be something of a dysfunctional disappointment to many people. So returning hundreds of thousands of Haitian migrants in the U.S. back to that dystopia seems unrealistic, if not inhumane, to many. So I'm joined here now by two people who know that reality especially well. Pierre Imbert of Aventura is a founding director of the nonprofit IET Community Trust and does a lot of development work inside Haiti. Award-winning Haitian-American journalist Jacqueline Charles covers Haiti for the Miami Herald. Thank you very much to the both of you for being with us here. Pierre, one of the arguments the Trump administration makes is that Haitians here should go back to Haiti to help Haiti develop again. But is that even possible, given conditions there?
Thank you for the opportunity. I am honored to be here with you, Jackie. This argument does not hold water at all, does not stand. There is increasing impossibility of even some of us that are development agents that are spread across many parts of Haiti to help support those development workers find it impossible to travel from one point to another, to reach the areas of a critical need, and also continue to inspire hope. And in an economy that has tanked, in a political situation that has left so much to desire, you simply have too many bad actors involved in a government, in perpetuating a government crisis that makes it impossible.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, the UN is now saying 1.4 million Haitians are displaced by the gang violence. Many are in refugee camps, essentially. How could Haiti ever really absorb more than 350,000 Haitian deportees, given what you know about that situation?
Well, I know. It's a very interesting question. I mean, I was listening to the court hearing earlier this month, and it was clear that neither the judge nor the government lawyer knew the geography.
And you're talking about the Mio versus Trump case in Washington, D.C., the federal court case.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the pressure that you're putting on a city like Apaisien that already received 250,000 Haitians from the Dominican Republic, and now you're talking about an additional 350,000.
Right. And Apaisien is one of the few places in Haiti where the gangs have not overrun the situation, no?
Yes, they're there, but they haven't overrun. Okay. And you used the correct terminology. I mean, it's not the gangs are not present in the rest of Haiti. They are. But people have been managing the situation. But we wonder, how long are you going to be managing before you're with a full explosion?
Mm-hmm. Pierre, you're from Arcae. You're aware that the gangs don't just control Port-au-Prince anymore. As Jack and I were just saying, in the past year, they've expanded far into the provinces, especially the Artibonite. How badly does that limit the possibility of repatriating Haitian deportees, much in the sense that I was just asking Jackie?
It essentially means many of those potential deportees may not be able to reach their origins, their home, their towns, because north of Port-au-Prince, for example, you have gangs that are firmly established. So going to pass north of Port-au-Prince to say towards Arcae, the Artibonite, and so forth, it's impossible. And from the same northern gate of Port-au-Prince, you head up to towards Mirabalé, Las Caubas, and in the rest of the Central Plateau. It is impossible unless you're willing to take your life into your own
and
hands.
And you and I were discussing last month, that's one of the reasons they've been taking towns like Monhui so that they can control those corridors that would that deportees would need to get back to where they want to live, right?
Very strategically.
Yeah.
So it's a stranglehold on, let's say, more than 50%, all the way up to 60% of the population of Haiti. When you consider the western department, that includes Port-au-Prince, and you go down south to Petit-Goave, and then if you return north, going past Maurice, Saint Mark, into the Artibonite Valley, what you have here is an impossibility. And then mind you, that many of at least a couple of those regions, the region of Arcae and the region of the Artibonite, constitute the breadbasket of the Haitian population.
Very important. Jackie, how powerful, though, are the gangs now? What's the status of the multinational police support mission that's meant to neutralize that gang rule in Haiti, particularly the new gang suppression force? But I'm most interested in hearing your assessment of just how powerful the gangs are right now at this moment.
Look, you have a situation where gangs control up to 90% of Port-au-Prince. I mean, I was in Port-au-Prince in September, and I was in the 10% that was under gang control. Okay, and because of this control, it spreads out. So you have 6 million people who are in need of humanitarian assistance, over 5 million people who don't have enough to eat. You talked about the 1.4 and more who are displaced. And the situation in these camps are awful. Yeah. 8,000 people killed last year because of gang violence, over 8,000 reported rapes. This is the reality. 60 to 80% of the hospitals are non-functional.
Yeah.
So you're talking about putting people in a situation where gangs are heavily armed. They're coming from these arms are coming from the U.S. Yes, we've seen some progress in the last couple of weeks with the task force. They're using weaponized drones, but there is collateral damage. The U.N. task force, the gang suppression force is supposed to start deploying in April, $173 million. But, you know, Haiti's talking about an election in August. We still haven't figured out how they're going to work that out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a volatile situation. Just on Sunday, two aircrafts landing from Brazil each took a bullet. So now those aircrafts, that company has suspended flights into Port-au-Prince.
And they were landing into Port-au-Prince.
They were landing into Port-au-Prince.
As I was saying, Cap-Haïtien is one of the few safe places to fly a plane into still, right?
Yeah, but you still have to get into Port-au-Prince, or you still have to get to the south if you're trying to. Not everybody is from the north.
Right. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. We're coming to you from the Little Haiti Cultural Complex in Miami, where we're discussing the TPS crisis facing our Haitian community. Right now, I'm speaking with Pierre Imbert of the IET Community Trust, and Jacqueline Charles of the Miami Herald about the reality on the ground in Haiti and why so many people consider it unsafe to deport Haitians back to it. And a reminder that if you miss any part of the program, you can search for the South Florida Roundup podcast in the NPR app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Pierre, the government vacuum situation I want to touch on with you two as well. The temporary presidential council, as it's called, is set to step down next week, right? It just fired, or says it fired, Prime Minister Ailis Didier Fils-Aimé. Is there any government there to receive deportees, hundreds of thousands of deportees if they were sent back to Haiti?
There hasn't been any government to speak of, Tim, government, but in name only. In fact, what you have there, as I mentioned before, it's a group of bad actors, all fighting for personal or clanic interest, and eventually the fate of the 12 to 13 million of Haitians hang in the balance.
And I should mention the U.S. and the U.N. were very upset at the council for the firing of Fils-Aimé, no?
Oh yeah, you could say it, but they were the architect. Okay. The U.S. and the U.N. were the architect of this very group of bad actors. Is it a coincidence that every time there's an opportunity to regroup Haiti, bring it together, and then you pick some of the worst individuals to lead? That's not a way out for Haiti.
But
for
Jackie,
sure.
What's your assessment of this transitional government situation and the chances that we could even see in a desperately overdue election this year?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Everybody was fixated on February 7th and not talking about February 3rd. But really, if you're the Trump administration, you're concerned about February 3rd because in order for you to achieve that, you need to have some sort of stability. And what we're seeing right now is this unstable situation with this government, and we don't know what's going to happen on February 8th. And we've seen in the last couple of years that every time we're going into a transition, the gangs step into this political vacuum. I'll just tell you an interesting anecdote. I talked to the head of the CEP, the Provisional Council, a couple of months ago, because they put out some study that says they did a survey, and 80% of these centers were prepared. And I said, I'm sorry, the math is not holding up for me. And then I said, take me to the steps. When did you go and where did you go? And then you realize, oh, he did that visit 2 months earlier. So you went to Kinskoff 2 months earlier, and I can't even get to where you went 2 months ago.
Right.
So it's a changing dynamics. I mean, where I could go yesterday, I cannot go today, and I can't go the next day. So you think about the fact that we're in this crisis.
Because of gang takeover.
Yeah. And, no, we're in a crisis because of elections.
No. I'm saying the polling sites. Maybe 2 months ago you could get there, but just last week, the Taliban group may have taken over that town.
Exactly. And we're talking about holding an election that will probably put us deeper into crisis, and no one's really having those conversations. Let me just say this. You have an electoral law that now creates a boulevard for people who have criminal profiles, human rights abuses, that they can run for office and they can be your next president. And nobody's been talking about that.
Mm-hmm. Pierre, even if and when the gangs are brought down in Haiti, how long, though, will it take Haiti to recover from their destruction, which I think is another important question when considering whether you send 350,000 Haitian deportees back there. When would it ever be proper for Haitian TPS holders to go back?
The conditions simply are not there. You cannot ask those many people to head back to literally a house on fire. You have a situation in Haiti where that is untenable. The notion that you are going to have people going back and rebuild their lives is simply not foreseen, possible in the foreseeable future.
And Jackie, just to end here, you wrote this week about a new report that the gang sexual violence that you've been alerting readers to with a recent series is reaching even more nightmarish levels. What does that say about the conditions that TPS holders would have to go back to?
You're sending them back to be targets for kidnapping gangs. You're sending them back to be targets for sexual abuse. In some cases, people have been raped repeatedly, and they're being gang raped, meaning that they are being raped by several individuals at once. And even children, young children, 5, 3, 8 years old are also falling, men and boys as well. I mean, no one is immune from this violence. And so that's a situation, as he says, you're sending people back to a house on fire.
And Pierre, I want to end with you. We have a question from the audience that I think you in particular would be interested in answering. What responsibilities does the U.S. have to Haitians, given that U.S. Haiti policy perhaps helped create the situation in Haiti today in some or many respects?
I think we all agree that foreign interference has been a major stumbling block in getting Haiti to the next phase of its development. And we also agree that there is an appetite from the part of U.S. governments. And then, you know, maybe it's an equal opportunity to pack Haiti with those actors that have proven to be not in the overall interest of the Haitian people and a threat to U.S. interest eventually.
Pierre Imbert is a founding director of the IET Community Trust. Jacqueline Charles covers Haiti for the Miami Herald. Many thanks to you both. When we return here at the Little Haiti Cultural Complex, we'll look at the legal realities of Haitian TPS and how Haitians here can navigate them. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thank you once again, Mario Willemai, and welcome back to the South Florida Roundup, airing today from the Little Haiti Cultural Complex in Miami for our program devoted to the TPS crisis facing our Haitian community. I'm Tim Padgett. The Trump administration intends to terminate TPS, or temporary protected status, for more than 350,000 Haitians in the U.S., more than 100,000 here in South Florida, next Tuesday, February 3rd. But many legal experts say they expect a U.S. court ruling out of Washington, D.C. before Tuesday that could block the administration, at least temporarily, from doing that. But if that doesn't happen, what are other legal avenues that Haitian TPS holders and their families can seek to protect them from being deported back to Haiti? Joining me now to explore those questions is Tessa Petit, director of the Florida Immigrant Coalition here in Miami, and Franly Julien, a prominent Haitian-American immigration attorney in North Miami. Thank you both for being here. Tessa, you mentioned to me earlier this week that in order to understand this TPS crisis, we first need to understand what TPS is in the legislative sense. What are the actual criteria for designating TPS for national groups and the criteria for ending it for them? The Trump administration has been making this rather controversial argument, obviously, that it's safe to go back to Haiti. But one of the key terms that's arisen with them is their use of, quote, national interest instead of national security, that it's not in the national interest for these Haitian TPS holders to remain. And I think you and a lot of other legal experts looking at this see a flaw in that. What is it?
The argument that they're using is that Haitians being in the United States represent a threat. They've also brought up the amount of Haitians who come in on a tourist visa and stay behind, and also mention the gangs in Haiti. These arguments do not stand when you think about national interest. National interest means that group of people need to represent an economic threat, a violent threat to the United States, which Haitians on TPS do not. Haitians do not. We don't do cybersecurity, right? We don't do... We are actually an economic benefit to the United States. So every aspect of the argument that they're using are flawed. And the decision of the court in California this week actually made it very clear that their argument for the vacatur of TPS for Haiti back in February of 2025 was flawed and unjustified. And considering that they use the same language, then...
I mean, national security seems a little more concrete. National interest seems a little amorphous, like they're just sort of arbitrarily deciding, well, we've decided it's not in the national interest for Haitians to remain here on TPS. Am I reading that correctly?
You're reading it exactly correctly.
Okay. Franly, at the end of the last segment, I mentioned that federal judge Ana Reyes in Washington in the Mio versus Trump case seems skeptical about the Trump administration's national interest argument, or rather it's, that it's not in the U.S.'s national interest for them to stay here, as we just said. But and given what you've seen from the hearings up in that case in Washington, D.C. so far, is it realistic to expect a ruling from her to block the cancellation of Haitian TPS? And even if she does, can it really stick?
This is a great question, Tim, and thank you for having me. The judge has placed a lot of focus on the administrative record. The TPS statute mandates the government to order a study of the situation on the ground before redesignating or terminating the given
designation. And this study is done by USIS, right?
Normally, DHS.
Oh, DHS. Sorry, yeah,
ask
okay, yeah.
The State Department for the study, because you know the State Department produces a report every year for every single country in the world.
Okay.
In the case of Haiti, when the judge asked the administration for the administrative record, give me a trail of your exchanges between those two two agencies, it was only 2 pages, and it was an email sent by DHS to the State Department asking whether it would be appropriate to terminate TPS for Haiti. 45 minutes later, the State Department was back with a one-liner, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. So the judge say it was not, did not comport with the spirit of the TPS statute.
But she seemed dissatisfied, A, with the argument that it's safe to go back to Haiti. She kept bringing up, for example, things like the FAA saying it's not safe to even fly into Haiti. So how are we going to fly 350,000 deportees back into the country? But she also seemed, as Tess and I were just talking about, unimpressed with the national interest argument. She made some rather odd analogies like, well, that's just like saying, well, because I don't like vanilla ice cream, then I don't think Haitians should be able to stay in the United States anymore with TPS.
Yes.
So do you get the feeling that, again, as I said, that she's rather skeptical?
No, absolutely. And we're expecting a good decision. But now the question, as you raised it, is what's next? You know, we know that the government will be appealing. And this is why it's so interesting that we had this decision a couple of days ago from the Ninth Circuit. Mm-hmm. The Ninth Circuit decision clearly stated that the government cannot end TPS on false pretenses.
Right, and I want to get to that ruling in just a second. But Tessa, we have a ruling set to come out in the Mio Trump case up in Washington this week, perhaps, as I said. And we've already seen the appellate judges in the Ninth Circuit, as Franley just mentioned, in California rule that the Trump administration acted illegally when it decided to cancel TPS for Venezuelans, because that's really what that case was about. Their decision would seem to apply to Haitians as well. What are you anticipating? Are you anticipating that the TPS cancellation will go ahead, or will the courts block it? And how are organizations like the Florida Immigrant Coalition preparing for whatever eventuality?
We do expect that the court will block it. We also expect that DHS will take one of two steps: either a regular appeal of the court decision or an emergency appeal with the Supreme Court, like we saw with Venezuela.
Okay.
The difference between those two is the regular appeal gives, you know, anywhere from 6 months to 20 months in court, but the emergency appeal with the Supreme Court can put this in front of the Supreme Court and reject the federal court decision in as little as 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, of course, organization advocates, we continue to do the work that we need to do. We continue to reach out to Congress. You've seen that there is a discharge petition filed at the congressional level to try to designate TPS for Haiti. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you know, also like advocacy groups and also services groups have mentioned, it's really doing a lot of education in the Haitian community.
Yeah, and so, Franley, as I said, I'm interested to know what you two think of this week's Ninth Circuit TPS ruling regarding Venezuelans. But I know you also think it's important what Tessa just mentioned. The Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley just filed a discharge petition in the House to force a vote on legislation that would extend TPS for Haitians. How could that change the dynamic here, especially with regards to the Supreme Court?
Okay, this is technical. I'm going to try to dumb it down.
Good, because I'm a journalist.
No, not for you. I know you as versed in immigration as I am. But here's the thing. The government, the executive branch, is able to designate a given country for TPS only through delegation of power from Congress, through the Administrative Procedures Act, right? Now, if the discharge petition succeeds in Congress, it sends a strong message not only to the executive branch, but
DHS.
Also to DHS and the Supreme Court.
And the Supreme Court.
In case the case lands on the Supreme Court's desk, to tell them that initially we had delegating our legislative power to the executive, but we're telling you, the Supreme Court, that if it were up to us, Haiti would have been redesignated.
Okay.
It gives a cue to the Supreme Court not to side with the government.
No, that's great. Even I, as a journalist, understood what you just said. Thanks. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. We're coming to you from the Little Haiti Cultural Complex in Miami, where we're discussing the TPS crisis facing our Haitian community. Right now, I'm speaking with Tessa Petit of the Florida Immigrant Coalition and immigration attorney Franly Julien. Tessa, I wanted to end here by just reminding folks, especially TPS, Haitian TPS holders and their families, what other legal avenues are available to them, not just if they lose TPS, but if they are in fact detained after next Tuesday by immigration authorities?
We have a lot of recommendations for folks. Most of them go around planning for their families, planning for their children, right? Making sure that they have all their I's dotted and their T's crossed. We have recommendations as, you know, identify, find an immigration lawyer immediately, discuss your situation, find out if you're eligible for any other avenue. Also, we invite folks to look into other countries, right? We know that Canada has a lot of opportunities now. And also, we want people to make sure that they know their constitutional rights. Even if TPS ends on February 3rd, when they wake up on Wednesday, February 4th, they still have constitutional rights. They still have the right to not answer. They still have the right to not open their doors and demand a warrant. We want people to remember that. And also for family members who are out there wondering what they can do, and also for non-immigrants wondering what they can do, something that is very important. You need to reach out to your member of Congress and ask them to sign on to the discharge petition.
Franly, same question to you. As an immigration attorney, what are the important legal avenues and strategies you want Haitians here to keep in mind in response to the possible termination of TPS next Tuesday?
They need, just as Tessa said, they need to consult with an attorney. Some people have relief, and they need to explore those. I know the most vulnerable chunk of the population comprises those who already have a removal order. And we currently have the Calderon settlement, which allows those with a removal order who are married to a U.S. citizen, if they're willing to move to one of the New England states, they can avail themselves of the settlement and get rid of the removal order and adjust status. So definitely it's a case-by-case analysis, but they need to consult with an attorney.
And just quickly, both of you, do you expect the discharge petition to go through in the House that Congresswoman Presley has put forth?
Well, this morning, Congresswoman Catherine Clark in a town hall in Palm Beach did say that she would work on getting the Democratic caucus behind it. What we need is everyone around the country to send a form, a letter, make a phone call. We do have an advocacy form, which is the flick.fyi/supporthaiti, where the letter is sent directly to your members of Congress. We need Democrats and Republicans to sign on to this.
Franly, just quickly.
I hope it does.
Okay. Franly Julien is an immigration attorney in North Miami. Tessa Petit directs the Florida Immigrant Coalition. Many thanks to you both. Our thanks again to our partner, the Little Haiti Cultural Complex. The music you've been listening to during this hour belongs to the Haitian genre known as compa, which made news recently when UNESCO made it part of the Intangible Cultural Heritage of Humanity. This is the third time in 4 years the UN organization has recognized a Haitian cultural tradition, along with pumpkin soup jumu and cassava bread. Mario Willemi's new album is called Freedom, and the song he's closing the show with for us now is Liberté, or Liberty.
Autrefois en déchita, moi t'as pensé à la vie, moi remarqué pour qui ça nous travaille. Nous lever chaque matin, n'a le travail pour nous payer bill. Oh, à la démisère, nous travaillons sans question taxe, sociale, sécurité. L'en pas voyer la caille critique. Yo parle nous contre mal, sans yo pas qu'on si n'a pas ses trahis, en pile péripétie. C'est ça qui fait ma travail pour me tourner dans le pays, moi. Haïti, pays néglible, moi pas s'oublier. Oui, oh, oh, ça m'a raconté. Oh, oh, oh. Ça nous brûle parler. Liberté, liberté, c'est travail qui banne liberté. Oh. Liberté, liberté, c'est travail qui banne liberté. Nous venez papiller à l'étranger qui pas une famille. Nous vîne papillé, à l'étranger nous pas gains amis. Haïti bien mal couché, qui docteur cap traité le souple. Haïti bien mal couché, qui petit cap longe la main. Nous vîne papillé, à l'étranger nous pas gains amis. Nous vîne papillé.